Everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 75 for the 13th of March, 2010. I'm David McVeigh, and this is a very special day because we have a special guest in the studio. But before we get to that, very quickly, I will introduce Mr. Josh Philpott.
Hi.
Hello, Josh.
Oh,
how are you?
The camera's over there now.
Yeah, it is.
I was looking over here. I'm like, why am I looking that way? Hi, everyone. It's really weird going out at one because I feel mildly awake today. It's like every time you do the
That's so unusual.
Yeah, I know. I'm about as freaked out about it as you are.
Well, if it helps you out, I've also moved my camera, so I'm kind of looking the wrong direction as well. So everything's a little bit mixed up here. Josh and I are joined in studio by a very special guest this week. We are joined by Holly McKay. Who is the entertainment reporter for FoxNews.com. Have I got that right, Holly?
Yes.
Yes. And she has generously donated some time to come in and have a chat with us.
Yay.
Now, for those who are regular listeners of Geek Actually, Holly was actually, last time she was on the show was a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And it is actually still, to this date, our highest downloaded episode.
So, I'm flattered.
I think a lot of that has to do with your father.
Yeah, he's big on it.
So every time I turned around, your father was promoting it out somewhere else, so it was very good.
Bless you.
So, Holly, award season is over.
Yay!
So what was your favorite award show of them all?
Gosh, my favorite award show. I always like the Golden Globes, I think, because there are just so many people. It's television, it's film, it's everybody.
Yeah. Well, I also like the feeling of the Golden Globes as well. It doesn't feel quite as flashy.
The Hollywood Foreign Press is hopeless at organizing anything. It was pouring with rain and there was no cover. Like, it was a disaster of an event. But it's always a lot of fun. There's a lot of people. It's sort of the first big show of the season, which I really enjoy. But I'm also a music girl, so the Grammys to me is pretty darn exciting.
I didn't get to see the Grammys this week. Was it good? Did we have any events like the, what was his name?
Kanye. No, but we had Taylor Swift performing with Stevie Nicks. And Stevie Nicks is my number one. Like, I adore her. And Taylor Swift was just off tune the whole way. You could tell Stevie was going to... wanted to kill her. And I heard that she was so pissed off stage. Like, because it's Stevie Nicks. Yeah. Like, she's crazy. And you don't sing with her if you're going to be out of tune.
Yeah, it was a little bit like at the... I think it was the Grammys or the VMAs. I can't remember. A couple years ago when you had Melissa Etheridge sing Janis Joplin with Joss Stone. And Joss Stone was so outclassed in every way.
By Melissa.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know? Sometimes those collaborations,
They just don't work. All right, so let's talk about the big one, though, because the last one of the year, of course, was the Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And from your point of view, I mean, were you there?
I was there.
You were there on the red carpet?
I was red carpet, and I was backstage. So when the winners came, I interviewed them when they got off.
So the question has to be asked, which is, on the most part, do you think the ceremony was a hit? I mean, because
I actually think it was.
Yeah,
I do.
Because Maren and I concur with that. We think it's actually probably the best ceremony that's been for some time.
They need to cut that show down, though.
Yes.
Swear to God, it's freaking long.
Well, it's funny because I watched the BAFTAs live as well,
right,
which was a couple of weeks earlier. And the BAFTAs is so short, so concise.
Yeah.
There's none of the glitz, and they just get on with it, you know?
Yeah, just get on with it. That's what I say.
Yeah, absolutely. But I thought Steve Martin and
Alec Baldwin
were genius.
They were very good. Yeah. At first, I was like, oh, I'm not laughing. Am I missing the joke here? But after a while, I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, I thought they worked.
I think what made it bitter as well, though, was the fact that it was one of the few years that I think I've actually watched it and just almost... got the ones I wanted to win. You know, the ones that I was...
The winners were very predictable,
yeah.
I felt.
That was actually my next question. Deserved, predictable, or disappointed?
Predictable. I think for the most part, probably deserved.
Mm.
Yeah.
I definitely...
Any ones you didn't agree with? particularly?
I don't know if Hurt Locker was my favorite film for the year. Aww. I'm an Inglourious Basterds girl. I'm a Quentin Tarantino fan. But I knew he wouldn't win. So
well, you know Mr. Tarantino, don't you?
I do. I think he's so hilarious. Funny. So I think Sandra Bullock is so deserving of Best Actress. Damn Monique, right. I think she's awesome. Jeff Bridges, he's great. Christoph Waltz. I think all the acting.
We were actually watching it. And I was taking notes because we did an Oscar special afterwards, and I'm actually writing down the names before they're called as winners. Yeah. It's like Christoph Waltz, predictable. We know he's going to take it. He won every award across the board. Yes.
What, that just reminded me when we were talking about Kanye, that woman that stormed the stage.
And we looked that up. We found out a little bit of information about
that.
Yeah,
and then she came backstage and did the same freaking thing. Yeah, took over the microphone. And everyone's like. Fuck,
did
like
you find out what the real story behind that was?
I didn't look into it at all, but otherwise she just felt that she was the conceiver of the whole thing and she couldn't understand why he would get credit over her and thought that women...
Well, what we found out about it, and I don't, once again, this is unconfirmed, yeah. This is just what we dug up, was apparently she conceived the documentary. It was actually about the whole group, not just about what was her name? Constance, whatever her name was. But it was basically when the director came on board, he focused more on the girl. She wasn't happy with it. They had creative difference. Apparently, she was removed from the film a year ago, but she was still listed as one of the producers, so she did get the Academy Award invite. And there's all this talk that she was almost tripped up by the director's mother with her cane, trying to stop her from getting to the stage. And she was crazy,
and she came on stage, and she was crazy.
That's it. I described her as a big Stan's big Jewish mother type. That's what she came across as. And she just kind of pushed him out of the way and started talking.
Embarrassing. She embarrassed herself.
It was. It was horrible. It was a horrible moment in the Oscars. But we'll go down as being remembered.
Good for them.
Absolutely. Now, as far as best film is concerned, I mean, really it came down to two players. I mean, that was how I felt. It really came down to it was going to be Avatar or it was going to be Hurt Locker.
And I love the way the Academy put Catherine Bigelow in front of James Cameron.
Yes. The seat directly in front. I thought that was brilliant.
And he was really gracious the whole time. He's clapping. First guy to stand up when she won Best Director. And, you know, every time the camera's on him. But her, she just sat there. She did not look around. She did not look at him.
Oh, she was also petrified, though. I thought when they brought her out the second time for the best film, they dragged her in from backstage.
Yeah.
I actually thought she was going to vomit. Yeah. she was really...
She just looked so...
And because the Hurt Locker had so much controversy around it because of the douchebag producer who decided to send around a mass email.
And they're being sued, apparently, as
well. And they're being sued, which we did ask the guy who won the screenwriter, and he was like, the soldier... Obviously, he knew that the soldier that was suing them and said, he's a very brave man, but the story is a work of fiction and that's it. It's based on nobody's life. I feel like everybody is trying to sue everyone now for their stories. I read the other day someone is now suing Quentin Tarantino because they said that Kill Bill was based on their story. It's Kill Bill came out however many years ago. Why are you suing him now?
And this is one of those questions with all of these sort of lawsuits where you sit there and go, why are you waiting so long? It's like with Apple at the moment. This is kind of going on a tech tangent. But with Apple suing HTC at the moment on 10 patent infringements for the iPhone, you sit there and go, why have you waited this long?
Yeah.
You know, if they were infringing your patent, why didn't you jump on them as soon as HTC came out? You know, it's like something odd going on. They hold off on these things.
Very bizarre. Yeah. Very bizarre.
What else we got here? Now, you said before we started the show that you did some stuff on American Idol. Now, I'm a self-confessed American Idol junkie.
Yes, I did a little bit. It'll pick up a bit now with the live shows happening.
Yep.
Normally we do. And normally, you know, I'm really sad because the top 13 party is this week and I'm not going to be there, and I do it every year.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to be here. So, no, well, you get back there.
You need to interview Crystal Bowersack for me. She's my hot favorite.
Okay.
And you need to ask her. I need a point blank answer to a question.
What is that?
On last night's show, which was the kickout show where they came down to the top 12.
Okay.
She looked either physically ill because we know she's diabetic and she's had problems. Or angry about something, and I want to know what it was.
Right.
Because she didn't smile once. She looked shaky walking across the stage. I don't think she's going to go the distance, quite frankly, because I think her health is a big problem.
Right.
But she is head and shoulders above, and even Simon said she's the one to beat. She outclasses everybody in that competition. She could already produce an album.
We need a girl to win this year. For the last couple of years, the guys have been disappointing. They win, but they don't. I mean, Chris Allen, his debut album, bless his heart, he's a lovely boy. He didn't even chart.
No, Adam Lambert
just, you know, screwed himself in the foot with that AMA performance.
Absolutely, but he was by far the best performer of Idol last year, and he should have won. Mm. But
that's the audience is not going to.
He was a bit out there for them, I think.
Yeah, that's just how it is.
All right, now one last question for you, Holly, and then we're going to move into a little bit of film news.
Okay.
I want to know, so far this year, I know it's early in this year, but what has been your favorite film this year? What has set Holly alight at the cinema?
I'm not going to reveal too much about it, but The Runaways I did see last week. Joan Jett, Dakota Fanning, Kristen Stewart. Very good.
Really?
Very good. I mean, I'm in music. I'm a child of music, so anything with like a Joan Jett in it, I'm going to naturally like anyway.
I didn't even know Joan Jett was still around,
She did the Joan Jett for it. Oh, it makes me love her all over again. It's really awesome. It's cool. Really awesome.
Wow.
And I'm not a big Kristen Stewart fan.
Neither am I.
But she did a really good job of playing Joan Jett.
Cool. So she plays... Sorry, hold on. Now you confuse me. So Kristen Stewart is playing Joan Jett.
Yes.
So this is a biopic of Joan Jett?
Yes, and Dakota Fanning is her, like, best friend.
Ah, yeah. Interesting, mm-hmm. Interesting. I did like Joan Jett in her day, so...
Really haven't seen that many movies this year just because it's been award season, so...
Yeah, award season kills everything, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, the screenings go a little bit quiet.
Let's test your geek cred just a little bit because we like to test everybody's geek cred.
Oh, God, I'm probably going to fail.
Clash of the Titans, excited or not?
Yes.
Yeah. That's not too bad. Okay.
Yeah. She's probably more excited about that than I am. I'm not even going to give you that.
I've actually been saying we've been following the trailers of Clash of the Titans, and as each trailer comes out, I've actually been getting a little bit less and less excited. So.
I'm kind of over anything that's a remake, to be honest. I feel a little bit
jaded
totally, of it. Totally now they're remaking Gilligan's Island.
Well, we've got a news story about it, not a remake, but a sequel to a film that I just think is... atrocious. I think I can't believe they're actually attempting it. Let's talk a little bit about news, though, and we'll start off by saying that Hugo Weaving, who I quite like, he's one of ours as well.
That is just such a good photo.
Isn't that just Hugo all over the place? Hugo Weaving is in final negotiations, apparently, to play Red Skull in the Captain America film. And I think this is really good casting. I think he will do a really good job.
Didn't read the comics, so I'm actually not sure about that one. But
yeah, see, this is why I need Dave. Dave was a real Captain America fan. But I think...
You were saying that before the show, too. You're like, I need Dave.
I need Dave for this. But, I mean, just look at this photo. He looks like Red Skull. So, you know, it's like he's got kind of the sunken cheeks now. But I think he will make a good choice. I just wish that they would get off their asses now and actually cast Captain America.
They keep trying.
Who would you cast?
Dave and I have already said quite openly that we believe that the guy who plays Captain Awesome in Chuck,
right,
Ellie's husband, should be Captain America.
Okay.
Without any question, he's not even in the running. Though. So apparently he did audition.
Right.
I read an interview with him saying that he did read for it, but he's not in the running. And when they start talking about people like Krasinski for Captain America, I sit there and go, oh, God.
what was some of the other ones? Chris Evans?
Evans is up for it now. He's actually a late runner. He's come into it now. I actually don't know.
I'm not a fan of Chris Evans.
Neither am I, but just he looks the part, and that's really all I need. I mean, I actually kind of hate the guy.
I think Chris Evans could. I mean, his turn as the Human Torch could... You could see a bit of the captain in that.
Yeah.
The only one that... I'm not even going to say that. I guess the only one that is in the running, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, is the guy who is from Generation Kill. I can't remember his name, but he's actually one of the three contenders for it. And he's got the right look, but it's just... I mean, we were discussing Captain America is such a... iconic character, and it has to be played just right because it walks a very fine line to just camp... corn.
Yeah.
And if you don't play this thing absolutely dead straight, it's not going to work. I mean, he is Marvel comic books equivalent to Superman. You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, he's the ultimate Boy Scout. And you're going to have just the right person. But anyway, we'll see. I think now that we've got Hugo Weaving, the biggest concern about the entire film has got to be the fact that Joe Johnson is directing it. Because after Wolfman, oh, good Lord.
Right.
Yeah. You didn't see Wolfman.
I didn't see Wolfman.
Don't.
Okay. Yeah, no. I left the cinema 5 minutes before because I had to answer a phone call, and I didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't miss anything. You didn't miss anything. It was not good. Okay, we got a trailer here. This is the new trailer for Tron Legacy, which I got to tell you, I'm real excited about. Because,
I'm excited about
it. It's just geek. You know, what can I tell you? It's just geek all over the place. And when I saw the first teaser for it with the light cycles, I went, yeah, that looks kind of neat. But then this teaser came out, and I just went, oh, man, I am so excited. So I'm really looking forward to it. So this is actually embedded on geekactually.com for those who are listening to the audio podcast. You can go have a look at it there. But here is, for our live people, here is the Tron teaser.
I promised you that if I ever got any information about your dad, I'd tell you first, right? I was paged last night. Came from your dad's office at the arcade.
So?
So? The number's been disconnected for 20 years. Two nights before he disappeared, he came to my house. He said he was about to change everything. Science, medicine, religion. He wouldn't have left that, Sam. He wouldn't have left you.
Alan, you're acting like I'm gonna find him sitting there working. Just, hey, kiddo, lost track of time.
Wouldn't that be something?
You gotta love that last shot. I'm sorry, that light cycle vaporizing across the tail there is just friggin' awesome.
This is kind of the epitome of geekness for me. It's just like, it's difficult not to get excited about that trailer for me.
I don't know, does that do anything for you, Holly?
I'm not an action girl. It takes a lot for me. Like, I have to be forced to see any action film. It has to be for work, otherwise I usually don't go by choice, but I do think that the trailer is very captivating.
It could be very Disney as well. Like that's my hope. Like,
yeah, so is the first one. So
no, but that's what I'm saying, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. Like, nothing in that looks too kind of like action and over the top for over the top sake. It seems to be keeping as well as it can the original, and that's all I'm hoping
for.
That
shot of Jeff Bridges coming up on the elevator with his people, and he's young, and he's then go, oh.
Love Jeff Bridges.
I'm sorry, that's just, that ad is just like minor geekgasm happening.
Yeah.
I sit there going, that's just fantastic. So our chat room was going berserk during all that. We had people going, love Drawn.
It'll be good.
Unfortunately, we have to wait another 9 months for it. It's not coming out until Christmas. So
that's all right. There's a lot coming out between now and then that'll keep me busy.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we'll get another full trailer for that mid-year-ish. So then,
which
will send us over the top, basically. Right. Okay, so Corey Haim.
Corey Haim, oh dear.
I know.
Very sad. Yes. I wasn't planning to go into work Wednesday because I was flying to Australia, but thanks to Corey Haim, it was a full day. Yeah. It was a full day.
It's so sad. I mean, the guy has had a really, really troubled life. Let's not beat around the bush. He had substance abuse problems. He's had money problems. In fact, it says here that in this article, it says that his estate is basically a few thousand dollars and huge debts, you know, and that's basically it. And for a guy who was the it boy of the 80s.
I met Corey once. he and I have a very good mutual friend. He was at our mutual friend, who's a producer's house, maybe it was just over a year ago, I think. The whole time he was there, he wanted Vicodin.
Oh, wow.
You got Vicodin? You got Vicodin? And my friend Nathan's like, no, I don't. Sorry, mate.
All right, I guess we should state, because we haven't actually said it yet, Corey Haim died, age 38 years old. He died of a pulmonary congestion, which is basically enlarged heart, and his lungs were filled with water. The coroner is now saying that it could be, they haven't got a definite on this yet, but it could be unauthorized prescription drugs that killed him, because he has been suffering from flu-like symptoms for the last few weeks. He got out of bed on, what was it,
Wednesday morning.
And basically collapsed at his mother's house, and he died. Now, apparently, though, the state attorney general, Jerry Brown, is now investigating this death because he says it might be linked to an illegal and massive prescription drug ring. And so it may not be as clear-cut as just him having prescription drugs and dying.
He might have been getting them off the black market.
Yeah, so there might be a little bit more to it. But Corey Haim, at the age of 38, is dead, which is a real shame.
It's very sad.
I mean, Corey Haim was very much on my radar because, you know, I was a child of the 80s, and we had Dream a Little Dream and The Lost Boys.
Corey Feldman, they weren't even friends. I don't know why Corey Feldman is carrying on the way he is.
Oh, Corey Feldman's going all over the place because he's basically saying he was my brother.
Corey Feldman's a dickhead. So, listen to this. Okay. So, Corey Haim dies. The first thing I do is email Corey Feldman's rep for a statement. His rep then emails me back straight away and said, look, I'm waiting for Corey's statement.
Ignore it.
I'll get it to you soon. Every hour she'd email me the same friggin' email. I'll get it to you soon. Get it to you soon. And I'm waiting for it, and then I look online, oh, Corey Feldman's having a press conference this afternoon. I'm like, you douchebag, just release a statement. Why do you need to have a press conference? You weren't even that... And Corey Feldman, I just have to say, last year I went to the Michael Jackson Memorial Concert. Corey Feldman was dressed up as Michael Jackson at Michael Jackson's Memorial Concert. I'm sorry. We were like... I mean, Corey Feldman testified against him in that molestation trial.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, why are you dressing up like Michael Jackson?
Corey Feldman is a publicity hound, though. I mean, he does everything he does for publicity. I mean, this is the whole thing. Why would he have agreed to do the two Coreys other than the fact that he wanted the publicity of being able to go on to Chelsea Handler's show and so
forth? And then when he was married to his wife, Susie, she did some spread for Playboy. Those two would go around to red carpets with Susie's Playboy magazine to promote her magazine.
That sounds a little bit like Heidi and Spencer.
Yeah, it does. That's probably where Heidi and Spencer got it from.
Yeah, I think so. Heidi and Spencer are just embarrassing.
I can't even go there.
No, they're just embarrassing. They're embarrassing themselves all over Hollywood.
Making a shitload of money while doing it.
I know. Yeah. And I got to tell you, I think it's amazing that she managed to do a Playboy spread that actually showed no nudity.
I heard she's doing another one.
Oh, is she?
She's got a different face.
Yeah. She has a different face every second different week, body. Doesn't she? She had, what was it? She had 10 procedures in one day.
How do you even do that?
I don't know.
She's
not
human.
Well, and her mother has basically said she looks like a monster now.
She does look like a monster.
She does.
She's awful.
And she was actually, you know,
she was semi-pretty.
She was a vapid ditz, but she was pretty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she doesn't, she's not pretty anymore.
No.
You know,
you'll appreciate this one. I remember, okay, I interviewed her once. It was at a, like an In-N-Out burger or something. Can't remember now. It was for, the thing she was promoting for World Hunger in Africa. And I said to her, oh, so, you know, what would you like to, what countries would you like to help? She said, oh, we really need to help starving people in Africa and Romania. And Spencer turned to her and he said, Africa's not a country, Heidi. She was like, well, and I'm like, and he's like, Romania, where did that come from? So clearly she like was trying to memorize something and it got lost upstairs and it all just came out.
It's a little bit like
funny.
That girl, that model at the awards where she was, and the Iraq and stuff.
Oh, yeah, and then Heidi proceeded to tell me she was praying for Sarah Palin. This was just before the presidential election,
sorry.
Praying for Sarah Palin.
Mafondo in our chat room has basically said she's not getting surgery, she's getting tune-ups, cyborg.
Yes, she's disturbing. Yeah,
she's disturbing on so many levels. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. We were actually talking about Corey Haim.
Were we?
We were kind of talking about
everybody's dying in Hollywood, and you know it's very sad. Just everybody's dying. They're young people.
Young. I mean, with Brittany Murphy a few weeks back.
You know, I did Brittany's last ever interview ever.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And the weird thing about it was a friend of mine, it was like 10 days before she died.
Mm.
And I was coming from another premiere, and a friend of mine was having a fashion, opening of a fashion store, and Brittany was going to be the host or whatever. And I mean, I was in Santa Monica, I think, for some premiere, and this was in Hollywood. I was like, why am I going to go all the way to Hollywood for this? But for some reason, I was like, I really need to go to this. I don't know why, but I really need to do this.
Mm.
And I went, and I sat with Brittany on the couch for maybe like an hour, and she was just the most endearing person. And I almost walked away feeling sorry for her because she was so endearing and so just... I don't know. It was the weirdest thing. Just such a beautiful person and so sweet and so lovely. And I remember feeling really sad when I left because I just thought, why are you being so lovely and, you know, pulling mints out of your bag for me and, you know, giving me hugs?
Well, she always struck me as looking like a really nice person.
She was.
It's really a sad thing because I love Brittany Murphy. And I think back to Brittany Murphy, early Brittany Murphy, when she was a character actress and she did stuff like she was in Reese Witherspoon's Freeway and she was in Clueless. And you look at this early stuff of hers and you go, you were neat, you were funny, you were unique. And then in her later films, she got the blonde hair and she got all thin.
She got Hollywood.
She became just another cookie cutter blonde.
Did.
And it was such a shame. And it was obviously eating at her.
Yeah.
Because of everything, that, you know, she had eating disorders and stuff
she
like that.
She did. And she just, and I remember she's like, oh, we're going to go to ballet. And I felt really bad because I never followed up with it. But she just, and I was so sad. And the worst thing about it was I remember that interview, I kept it and I transcribed it. I think I filed it maybe, and it never got used in that week. And I thought, oh, you know, we'll just go on the back burner. That morning she died, it was awful. My editor's like, oh, my God, do you have that interview?
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, actually, because we never ran it, did we? But now it's handy.
Yeah.
So come
should
in.
Listen to you so, in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah, no, I'm speaking of deaths, I guess we should mention, it's actually not on the running list, but we should mention the Farrah Fawcett issue.
Oh, my God. The Academy can kiss my ass. What assholes.
Farrah Fawcett was actually left off of the... So there was a producer left off as well, but let's just focus on Farrah as well.
There was B from...
Let's focus on Farrah because Farrah was left off the memoriam in the Oscars, and the Oscars Academy has basically said that it was because they didn't have enough time and she was more of a TV actress.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, did they forget that the woman got nominated for a fucking Golden Globe Award for her work in Extremities?
She is an American icon. Like, I covered this story the morning after. I remember I called the Academy rep, and she said to me, oh, basically, the short answer is there wasn't enough time. An unusual amount of screenwriters died this year. We had to honor them, and, you know, we left her off. No apology, nothing. Disgusting.
She deserved to be on there more than Michael Jackson did.
Everyone's like, well, you let Michael Jackson in there. What did you do? The Wiz, that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean...
He wrote the theme song to Ben. Okay, cool. You know, Farrah Fawcett worked... Not only did she get nominated for a Golden Globe for Extremities, she also worked with Harvey Keitel and Kirk Douglas in the film Saturn III. I mean, she was in feature films. It doesn't matter how much television she did. She was in feature films.
And she was an American icon.
And she was an American icon. And I think it was shameful that they left her off. And good news is that Ryan O'Neill is basically going all over Hollywood at the moment, basically.
Yeah, I got a statement of him that morning, too. He was talking at this point. And I called Alana Stewart, who is Farrah's best friend. She produced the documentary, and she was just like, don't know what's happened to award shows these days, but Oscars was disgusting. and Tatum O'Neill as well, she was really upset about it. I think the Academy maybe didn't, I don't know.
But they're standing their ground. They're not coming out and apologizing.
They're not coming out and apologizing. Obviously wasn't an oversight, unless they're trying to cover up, if it wasn't an oversight.
And I'm sorry, I've seen those memoriams be longer than that. That wasn't the longest one they've ever done.
No.
You know? And I just think, you know, something about this, it just doesn't sit well with me. You know, it doesn't sit well. They've left her off. There's something political here, and I don't like it. And it really is annoying. Because, let's face it, she died the same week as Michael Jackson.
Same day as Michael Jackson.
This was a big story when she died. We covered it on this show. You know, and it's like you said, she was an icon of the 70s, you know? And to just be left off like that is just shameful.
Yeah, that was the most disappointing part of the Oscars.
Speaking of shameful... I'm going to use that as a tangent, which is really kind of inappropriate, but I'm going to use it as a tangent and say one of my favorite films of the 1990s was a film called Midnight Run. which was directed by Martin Brest, who directed Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He also went on to direct Geely, but we won't hold that against him at this point.
Yeah, we will.
But he directed Midnight Run. It had probably one of the most unique and different Danny Elfman scores in cinema history. It didn't. It wasn't his usual Oompa Loompa stuff. It had Charles Grodin and it was Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. The chemistry between them was perfect. Basically, about a bounty hunter who has to pick up a white collar criminal who has stolen money from the mob. Funny, exciting, great film. One of those rare gems of a film. Well, this week it has been announced that the sequel is on the way.
Oof.
I know. And then it was very distressing when I read this. Apparently De Niro is on board for the sequel. Charles Grodin is not. Okay, so that's one element from the film takeaway. We've got a new scriptwriter who is the person who wrote Role Models, which was an okay film, but not quite in the same league.
Not the same kind of film.
We don't know who's directing at this point. And it just simply says Walsh will have to bring in a new fugitive.
Oh, God, please don't let it be someone terrible.
So all I can think is, okay, probably Tracy Morgan or something. Hell no, you know?
I have to say that that scares me to high heaven because, like, I mean, I haven't really seen anything De Niro's done in the last few years I've actually really liked. And I saw recently the one with him and Pacino, Righteous Kill. That film was terrible.
A lot of people said that was a cash in just to try and get that moment like Heat again.
Yeah, and you saw them trying to spark it, but they were just the connection between the two of them was just weak. And yeah,
what are your thoughts on this? Have you seen the original Midnight Run?
I haven't seen it.
You've got homework to do. It was a terrific film. Speaking of remakes, let's try one more. Actually, no, before we get to this one, because this one actually kind of disturbs me even more, let's watch another trailer. This is the latest Iron Man 2 trailer, and I got to tell you, minor geekgasm for Tron Legacy, major geekgasm for Iron Man 2. This is the latest in the series of trailers, came out this week, showing a lot more, and I got to say, just watch for the scene between him and Scarlett Johansson. Absolutely priceless.
Please turn the mic.
You a Scarlett fan?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, he's very eccentric.
I want one.
No.
If you can make God bleed, people will cease to believe in him. They will be blood in the water. And the sharks will come. Sit here and watch as the world will consume you.
Our priority is to get the Iron Man weapon turned over to the United States of America.
I am Iron Man. The suit and I are one.
Contrary to popular belief, I know exactly what I'm doing.
What I saw you do to Tony Stark on that track?
Wow.
You need my resources.
I want to make Iron Man look like an antique.
This whole lone gunslinger act's unnecessary. You don't have to do this alone.
Textbook narcissism. Agreed?
Yeah. got to love the portable armor in the briefcase, which is such a throwback to the comic books. Because in the comic books, he keeps the Iron Man suit in a briefcase. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I watched that trailer for, like, that's probably the fourth time I've seen that. And I have to say that I'm a lot more excited than I was. I still have the same issue that I had with Dawn, that I don't feel the same Terrence Howard feel. He doesn't seem...
True.
He doesn't seem as friendly, you know. They seem like different age groups, and they seem like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It really
It's just that replacing of an actor in the middle of a series I have a problem with, when there doesn't seem to be any reason to do it. And Terrence Howard did a fine job. I mean, he wasn't mesmerizing, he wasn't brilliant, but he did a fine job. And, you know, I just think the way Marvel handled the entire kickoff was also really, really rank. Yeah. So.
But are you a Gwyneth fan? Are you guys a Gwyneth fan?
You know, I like...
In this film, yes.
Yeah, I actually quite like Gwyneth. I think... I don't like some of her projects, but I like her. I think she's got a nice feel to her, and I love her as Miss Potts. I think she's fabulous. I'm not a huge Scarlett Johansson fan, but I like her in certain films.
Yeah.
And she looks like she can kick ass as Black Widow, so I'm down for it. I mean, that shot where she does that flip around that guy, which is obviously a stunt double, obviously, but it just looks so damn cool. So you got to admire, you know, kick ass women. You know, I love that. All right. So yes, we are eagerly awaiting Iron Man's arrival, which luckily is not quite so far away. It's May, I believe. So
something to look forward to.
We're closer to that one now. Speaking of what I was talking about before we went into that trailer with remakes, have you both seen, I don't know if you've actually seen them or not, have you seen Excalibur, the John Borman King Arthur film?
I haven't seen it.
Who was lead in that?
Terry, British actor, but it also had every British actor who was working in Hollywood at the time, so it had Nigel.
What year?
1982 or 81, I think.
No,
it was.
I don't think I've seen that.
I wasn't
either.
Alive.
You weren't alive.
We're both very young.
Things from before you were born.
Dave.
Okay, this is Excalibur. Excalibur was considered to be one of the most definitive tellings of the Arthurian legend. It was brutal, it was bloody, it had really, really hard sex scenes in it. It was just rough around the edges on every sense.
Was it a good film?
It was brilliant. It was one of those films where you sit there and go, I really, really enjoyed that. I saw it about 8 or 9 times at the cinema. It just really, really tickled me. Well, they've been talking about trying to remake this film for an awful long time. Mm. And they've never been able to quite nail it. Well, the closest we've come so far is apparently a guy called Warren Ellis was writing a screenplay which he just titled his untitled King Arthur film, because he said that he always felt like he had Excalibur.
You mean Warren Ellis, the comic book, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Wow.
Basically, he said he always had Excalibur kind of looming behind him, and he didn't want to call it Excalibur because he had this behemoth behind him. Mm-hmm. But he's now been replaced, and Guy Ritchie is actually looking at doing...
I'm so not a Guy Ritchie fan.
I'll say I am. I kind of think Guy Ritchie's kind of interesting. I would actually much prefer to see Guy Ritchie doing his own stuff, because I think things like Rock and Roller and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, this is Guy Ritchie territory. I would like to see him go back to his original stuff. But he is an interesting choice for somebody like King Arthur, especially after dealing with...
Well, yeah, I think Sherlock Holmes is kind of an interesting step for him, because, I mean, with the basically constant regurgitation of, good or not good, the idea that he's basically done another...
The same film over and over and over again.
The same film over and over again with different jokes. To see Sherlock Holmes, though, again, we disagreed on that and I didn't particularly enjoy it, I will say that one thing was, it was interesting to see him step so far into a different territory, to step off into, you know, sort of a totally different style of film. May it, you know, be it still set in the same kind of, you know, cockneyness and so on and so forth. It was still a very big change to him, and I'd love to see him do something else. I'm not
sure if King Arthur's going to fit him like a glove or not, but what is curious about this is a screenwriter has now been signed, and it's John Hodge, who actually wrote Trainspotting and Shallow Grave for...
What an odd collection of things.
For Danny Boyle's old screenwriter. And he's a very good screenwriter. And one of the things that they actually said was that because they're going back to the source material of La Morte d'Arthur, which is what Excalibur is based on and considered to be the definitive take on Arthur, the problem with La Morte d'Arthur is it is actually thousands of pages long, and it's in old English, and it's just a mess. I mean, it really is. You've got to wade through it. It's like you need a PhD to read this thing. Mm. And they're saying that he is actually a very good writer at being able to bring lots of messiness together and make it coherent, which is what he did with Trainspotting. And so they're saying that he might be the person to actually be able to bring this thing together. Mm. But they're still not saying it's an official remake of Excalibur.
Right.
Even though it's based on the same source material, it's based... I mean, there's so many factors involved. They're saying that, you know, this is basically Excalibur reworked. But at the moment, it's just being called the Guy Ritchie King Arthur project. So it'll be interesting to see if they can do it. I mean, and it'll be nice to see if they can actually do King Arthur like Excalibur rather than doing it like Jerry Bruckheimer's King Arthur.
King Arthur?
Yeah. So, which, you know, I thought was a fun ride, but it's not King Arthur, let me tell you. So, anyway, so, yeah, more homework. You need to see Excalibur.
Okay.
You need to see
Excalibur.
We'll add it to the list.
You need to add that to your list.
There's a lot of ages.
Okay, I'm dying to know, Dave, what is the mystery trailer? You've got it on the show notes here.
I've got a mystery trailer. This showed up this week, and I just thought, how much we love this series of films, I could not resist. I'm going to leave the mics open for this one. This is just a very short teaser for Eclipse.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus. Did...
I want to die right now.
Thank you.
Wait till you hear this dialogue.
I promise to love you every moment forever.
She's still human.
You have no idea how much I hate you
the
right now.
The jury don't give second chances.
Do she love?
So against me becoming like you. I know the consequences of the choice you're making. After a few decades, everyone you know will be dead.
You wouldn't have to change for me, Bella. I'm in love with you, and I want you to pick me instead of him.
It's a great line coming up.
You have to consider the Oscar idea Willy. That I might be better for her than you are.
Edward. She found us.
I'll protect you, no matter what.
You don't know what you're getting yourself into.
I'm gonna fight for you until your heart stops beating.
Oh, that trailer slipped out of sync. But anyway, if the audio people can hear it, well, I'll embed that trailer on the site. But that line, "I will protect you till your heart stops beating," it's like,
yep, that's that brilliant writing. Whoa. That is those books. Yeah.
Enticing.
Yes.
Yeah, isn't it just makes you really run out? I mean, at least the teaser for New Moon, which was also not a great film, but at least the teaser had like a guy turning into a wolf or something. You know, something to give it some...
Throw us something.
Throw me a freaking bone here.
I can't cope with Twilight.
The only thing that Josh and I have said is that we are waiting for the fourth one, purely because the synopsis for it is like a psychedelic nightmare. And
yeah, it literally is like a bad trip.
We're just kind of hanging in there because we really want to see this fourth one because it's got like werewolf baby sex and all sorts of weird, strange
babies
ideas.
Crawling out of a live lady and
Alien.
It is exactly. Everybody has said this is unfilmable, and then it's the worst of the series of books, and they're all saying that this is... And there was actually talk at one point that Summit was actually not going to make the fourth book, but now they said they are going to make it. And Josh and I are going, oh, man.
Of course somebody's going to make it. They're going to make a shitload of money.
And I think, quite frankly, that the fourth one should be directed by David Lynch.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I think, actually, one of the actors came out. I don't know which one it was. One of the actors was asked who would they like to direct the next one, and they said Tim Burton.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Somebody well, that's
going to
lead us
person.
Right into our...
Might have been Rob or Taylor. I can't remember now.
Dude, that David Lynch idea is fantastic. I would love to break the minds of that many Twilight fans.
Oh,
it
but
would
they
be
would
brilliant.
Just, they would just die. They would be crying,
and so on and so forth.
They wouldn't know what to do with it. All right. We got one more little piece of video because we just found this piece of video online this week. Actually, somebody posted it to me on Facebook. And it made me laugh. And, oh, actually, Holly needs to go, don't you?
I'll tell.
Okay, we're just going to take a brief pause in the show right here.
We could play the trailer.
We can play the trailer. This is a masterpiece as far as I'm concerned. So everybody have a look at this. This will tell you how formulaic trailers have become.
A toast. Establishing me as the wealthy, successful protagonist. Who is handsome? Murmur of a grandparent.
Friendly concern that something may be missing from your life.
Confidence that nothing is missing in my life.
Interrupted statement about
reassurance that my good fortune will not waver.
Introduction of characters suffering from the most topical disability of the present year. Said retard is now under your custody.
My catchphrase!
Frustration with these new circumstances.
Admiration at your seeming selflessness.
Interest in your bold rejection of social norms as evidenced by your dyed hair.
My name.
Catchphrase!
Relief at having found meaning in my life.
Friendly concern that a string of heightened and seemingly unrelated plots may now arise. Dude!
Differences are surfacing between us!
Accusations about your sexuality!
Suspicion that a character once thought trustworthy
may not be trustworthy! Also, I've gotta use tough love to help this Latin American teenager believe in himself. Also, I must prove innocent this incredibly humble human male.
Also, I've decided to fight with the Native American metaphor against the American military metaphor.
Leave females, nay!
Naive yet inspiring statement. And then the music gets hopeful.
Specific outlining of your major character flaws.
Overreaction.
Friendly black optimistic advice.
Passionate plea.
Whispered repetition.
This scene doesn't make it to the final cut of the movie.
Inspiring final lines of a speech that douchebags will quote in their Facebook profiles. Yeah!
Explicitly stating the moral of the story and awkwardly working in the movie title.
Oh, catchphrase!
It's not going to be entirely a dramatic film because we laughed there.
I love that. Nice. The chat room is sitting there going, WTF? What the hell are you playing? All right, that's basically a fan-made thing that was sent up on YouTube. It was actually from... it wasn't College Humor. That's the other one I was looking at. No, this is from YouTube. It was mailed to me, and I just went, oh, my God, they've completely nailed... nailed...
The Oscar-winning
trailer. The Ernest trailer.
Yep, exactly.
The Ernest trailer, I think, is what you want to put it down to. And I just think that my catchphrase.
My favorite is still just that bit, just lead female's name, where he's just screaming it out, and you're just like, God.
And I love that when it goes, actress trying to make a comeback, and she's got the Coke on her cheek. Yeah.
So, not so far removed from the truth.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to move into our feature review, and unfortunately, we are going to lose Holly. So, because Holly has to move on, her time is valuable. And how long are you here in Australia for?
Just till Friday night, so a week.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of people to catch up with, don't you?
Yeah, I'm limiting it.
Yeah. So
I'm limiting it. Trying to sleep.
If people want to read more of your stuff, we actually put some links on Geek Actually, but for the people who only listen, people want to catch up more with what you do.
Yes, foxnews.com. Pop Tarts is my column on that. It's kind of hard to... They're redesigning the landing page at the moment, so...
I was actually looking through the site, and it's actually a little bit awkward to find stuff.
They've redesigned it, and it's a work in progress.
Mm. And now you also appear regularly on...
Yeah, I do different Fox shows, the affiliate shows, and different of the online shows, as well as the Fox shows that are in America, so it's kind of all over the place. But you can follow me on Twitter, Pop Tarts Tips. And then you can stay up to date with everything that I'm doing and where I'm at and what's going on.
I also noticed on Facebook, I think it's about time you actually put a fan page up.
Oh, I'm so...
Now, the reason why I say that is because you've got so many followers.
I do.
And they really should be fans rather than friends.
I know. There's too much personal information on my Facebook page for these many thousands of random strangers. But but yeah, maybe.
I follow you, Holly.
Thank you.
So, so if you want to catch up with more of Holly, go to foxnews.com. You can actually, I found it, if you just go to foxnews.com, type in Holly McKay. You get a nice listing of articles.
You get all my stuff. So.
And I was reading your Alec Baldwin story. Was that your last story? Was that about... There was an article on... It was when I did your name search, I actually came up with a list of names, and it was Alec Baldwin, something to do... Oh, I don't remember. Anyway. But there was a whole bunch of... Yeah, because you put a whole bunch of new ones up.
Yeah, I filed a whole heap of stories the morning before I left, so...
And are you still filing from Australia? Because I know last time you came out, you were still filing from...
No, I took annual leave.
Oh, good on you.
I'm off.
Take some time.
Damn right.
Now, hopefully, now that we actually have a call-in phone number, we might be able to get you to call in more regularly.
Yeah, definitely.
Give us a little goss update.
Skype in and see what's going on in La La Land.
That would be fantastic. We'll make sure we arrange numbers with you before you leave. All right, for the chat room, we're going to take a short 10-minute break, which is unusual for us, but we're going to take a short 10-minute break. The feed will stay on. We're just going to drop the mics for a second while we say goodbye to Holly, and we will come back in about 5-10 minutes. It really won't
and be I just want to say before this, you start the film review that David and I are going to have disagreed if I was here because I loved Alice in Wonderland and I thought
can we kill the mics? Kill it.
No.
Helena Bonham Carter was the best. She was the best.
Actually, I will agree with you. I think
how funny was she?
As far as I'm concerned, Helena Bonham Carter was the second best thing in the film. My favorite thing in the film was the Cheshire Cat, Stephen Fry as Cheshire Cat, who I just loved.
He was just
Stephen Fry as Cheshire Cat.
And the Flutter Walking Dance.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. All right. So Holly liked it. So if you don't like Josh and my opinion, coming up in just a few minutes. You can always fall back and say, Holly liked it.
Digital Angel's with you in the chat room. She loved it. So, yeah.
Not as good as Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, but...
I'll definitely agree with that.
Digital Angel says, what was your Twitter again? It's...
Pop-Tarts Tips. So POPTARTSTIPS.
There you go. So now you can follow Holly on Twitter. That was the lovely Holly McKay. Unfortunately, she couldn't stay with us for our full feature review, but she has other things to do. She's a lot more powerful and important than we are. So let's move on. We will start this review, as we always do, with the trailer. Today we are reviewing Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton's latest epic, starring Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, and Mia Wasikowska, who is one of ours. She's Australian. And we actually have some personal ties to her. I'll explain that when we come back. But here's the trailer to get us started.
There is a place like no place on earth. Some say to survive it, you need to be as mad as a hatter. Which luckily, I am, Alice.
It's you. You're back.
Alice! Alice!
The Alice?
You're absolutely Alice. I'd know you anywhere.
You're all late for tea!
Alice has returned to Wonderland.
Since you've been gone, the Red Queen has taken over all of Wonderland.
Find her!
Help us make the world right again.
Oh, are there help! I need a pig here. I love a warm pig belly for my aching feet. Stop that.
We have our champion.
Hold on tightly.
This is impossible.
Only if you believe it is.
Okay, so that was the trailer for Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. And I'm just going to start off by saying this very, very clearly.
Actually, before you even start off saying what you're going to start off by saying, can I just say, I'm sorry, Digital Angel, this is going to hurt. That's okay.
Digital Angel, our chat room, we know, is a big fan of this. And yes, we apologize in advance. But let me just start by saying that this was not a good movie. Right? And that's the nicest way I can put it. All right, I think it is a failed experiment that is Tim Burton basically saying, we have a wonderful piece of source material. How can we fuck it up?
You think that's how he started out?
That's kind of how I feel, because this doesn't resemble Alice in Wonderland, the story, in any way, shape, or form. Now, it is loosely kind of based on Through the Looking Glass, but that's not what they're calling this movie. They're calling this movie Alice in Wonderland. And if we're going to stick with Alice in Wonderland as a title, then let's trust Lewis Carroll a little bit and trust that he actually wrote a book that has stood the test of time, that is a literary masterpiece, and go, that would work. And I look at this film and I say, visually, it had all the right elements. It looked like Alice in Wonderland. The Cheshire Cat was wonderful. You know, the visual design of it was actually a cross between Tim Burton and Lewis Carroll, but it was enough of Lewis Carroll that I could have bought into that world. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he went off in this weird, weird tangent of a film, and I just sit there and go, why didn't you trust it?
Hmm.
I thought Johnny Depp, two strikes, three and you're out, Mr. Depp, because after Public Enemies and this, that's two strikes.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like Johnny Depp at all.
What was with the accent? Why was he Scottish?
Why was he slipping?
Why was he playing William Wallace in every scene where he had to stand up and say something important? I really expected red and black face paint and a sword waved above his head.
Well, he was standing with the sword at one point, and you're going, oh, Braveheart, you know? It's like, and he had the kilt on as well, and you sit there and go, we're going to go into a spoiler zone pretty quick, because I want to mention a few specific examples of why I didn't think this was very good. All I can say was the film was a mess. I think, very badly written. I think Mia Wasikowska, who I had high hopes for as an actress, we have personal contact. Mirren, my mother, who has been a guest on the show, actually dialect coached Mia for an American film that she was going for. Mia showed a lot of promise. She showed that she had a lot of, she picked up the dialects well, and as far as Alice in Wonderland is concerned, her dialect was perfect. But she was dull. And all I could think of all the way through it was that Woody Allen film, Deconstructing Harry, where the actor was out of focus. You know, and as you go, she was out of focus. She was dull, and she missed opportunities right left and center. She came across, what was the description you came up with, or you heard?
What, the fact that she looked like a heroin addict.
She really did. I think there was actually a better word for that. I think the words were crack whore.
Trying to be nice here. That had a bit less.
I'm not going to be nice to this film, because it really wasn't good. Now, look. I have to look at this from the point of view of a 10-year-old as well, because my son wants to go see it. Do I think my son would enjoy the film? I actually think he would. I think he would be dazzled, and he would look at it, and he would go, isn't that cool, and isn't that fun? But I think if you are going to look at this film in any critical sense, if you're going to look at this film and actually try and piece it together as a coherent film, it doesn't work. Josh?
Well, look, I'm going to start straight out the bat by saying anyone that's going to try and side-roll me on this or say that I'm being unfair, the current rating on Rotten Tomatoes for this is 52, and it is a splat mark, not a tomato.
And the other note on that, though, the flip side of that, is that this film is breaking box office records.
I have no doubt in that. And like I said, I'm reviewing this as a film. I went into this film, to the people, and I'm mainly talking to Digital Angel, I gave this film every possible aspect I could. Number one, I went and saw it in 3D. I went and saw it in 3D because I wanted to give it as much as I possibly could. I took with me a huge Tim Burton fan. A huge Tim Burton fan that has never seen fault in anything that this person has ever done, right? Now, we both walked out of that upset, right? Now, that is not only because, in my opinion, the script is just god-awful, right? The script to that movie is just all over the place. Like you said, it tries to take elements of the first one, take some of the bits from the second one, put it together in something that makes very little sense, and the only scene that I even saw resemblance in was the fact that there was a battle at the end. Just the fact that there was a battle, mind you.
But once again, through the looking glass, not Alice.
Exactly. So there's that, and that upset me a little. What really upset me was just the fact that I couldn't buy practically any of the characters. Mia, it was deeper than that for me. Like, you talked about the fact that she looks bad. I mean, I can even get over that. I do understand that they were trying to go for the fact that she was, sort of sleep deprived and so forth. Yep, fine, I can deal with that. But it wasn't that. It was the fact that this film had jokes in it. And I know it had jokes in it, because I was looking for them. I was going, there has to be that Tim Burton humor. And every one of them fell flat. And I mean in an entire cinema. No one laughed at them, because the delivery was
wrong. Know they were there, because there were actually a couple moments where Mia would say something as an offside to something that happened. And there were actually moments where I kind of went, that was actually a funny line.
Mm.
But it should have been a roar of laughter at that point. Yes. It should have worked. Mm. And because she never committed to those laughs, and so they fell flat.
And it really upsets me more, and this is the funny thing, because people think that I'm going into this going, because it's Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, and they know I hate this kind of thing. They were saying, oh my God, you're just going to hate this for that reason. I went in with so much... I wanted to like this film. You know why? Because not only did I, of course, grow up with the original film, the Disney cartoon, on top of that, I also have a great love for... And again, I'm going to go obscure. I won't waste much time on it, but there was a game called Alice by someone called American McGee, who took a dark look at the Alice world.
Mm.
And it was done beautifully. Like, it was a very creepy kind of out there thing, and I didn't expect any level of that, especially with Disney in there. But they could have kept that kind of cracked, happy world. That was what I wanted, and that was not what I saw in this film. The scene that gave me some hope for the film was the first time she comes to the table, and she's sitting there. She comes up to Johnny Depp and thing, and you've got the rabbit who's manic at this stage.
The march hair was out there.
Was out there. And then, like, that kind of scene felt good, because it was kind of like you had the Mad Hatter, you had him looking very distraught, you had the broken, smashed-up table. So, like, there was the feeling that she was returning to a world that wasn't, what it used to be. Every other scene just jumped between random, over-the-top happiness and ridiculous levels of darkness. Like, the idea of having a river of blood with heads in it, right, is just a total offshoot to the whole kind of rest of the film and how trying to remain mildly lighthearted.
And we're kind of going into slight spoiler territory here, but the White Queen and her severed fingers into the potion, and the White Queen herself was this demented character, and if memory serves, the White Queen was like Glinda, the White Witch of the whatever it is in Wizard of Oz. She was pure and innocent. She was the guiding light. And Tim Burton's got her as this goth, pale-skinned, black lipstick weird.
What was with the black lipstick?
I don't know. And also, weird character.
Terrible miscasting on Anne Hathaway.
Oh, because, absolutely.
Like, the idea of the White Queen was kind of, the hand gestures and things like that. You need someone on screen that is visually dazzling to pull off something like that.
Or uniquely quirky. If they're going to go with that kind of quirk that they want to go with, you need somebody who can sell that quirk. And I was saying to you before the show that I think Zooey Deschanel would have been able to sell that kind of quirk.
Exactly. You know? Like, that one scene really falls out of character for her, because it's like she's got the nice and the swirly hands and the sort of the on-screen presence, and then all of a sudden she's in a kitchen mixing up a potion. I'm just going, who are you now? Are you trying to be someone different, or are you trying to be the same person? I think the film's moment that really broke me was the dance at the end of the film.
And we'll save that for spoiler territory. We'll come back to that.
I'm not going into spoilers here. All I want to say is, at that point, I realized this film is a producer's wet dream. That's what this is. It has talking animals. It has Johnny Depp.
Tim Burton.
It's got Tim Burton's name on it. And it's just a bizarre level of just unnecessary scenes to just... like, to be remembered. The one thing I'm going to say, and I know that half my friends are going to be absolutely bagging me out for the next week, but the one thing that was amazing about this film was the costume design. It was just beautiful. And I will admit that it's ridiculous, the amount of times they raise and grow her just so that they can change the costume. But no, that was fantastic. Look, the costume design, the world, the look was fantastic. And that was what bothered me. I was hoping if I just focused on the way it looked, I could stay happy.
Well, I got to say, there's actually one moment in the film which is a flashback. And we won't say where it is in the film or anything to spoil it. But there is a scene in it where Alice finally remembers that she's been there before, basically.
And it is just the most precise.
Absolutely. And you've got, like, you got this minute and a half where it's the little girl Alice, and she's painting the roses red, and she's talking to the caterpillar, and all these scenes from Alice in Wonderland. And all I could sit there and go is, that's the movie I want to be watching right now.
Yeah, like, even if you're going to do the sequel, like, I mean, those scenes were so true to the stories. And I think that's what really bothered me. I was like, that was what needed to happen. That was what needed to work. The jokes didn't work for me. The characters didn't work, with the exception of Stephen Fry, who was amazing as the Cheshire
Cat. Stephen
Fry
was wonderful as the Cheshire Cat. And we disagree on this, but I also thought Helena Bonham Carter was actually a very good Queen of Hearts, because from the book, I mean, this is the character. She's nailed that character, and she is just odd enough as a person to be able to carry that off, you know? But then you have her sidekick with Crispin Glover, who
is the worst person in that film.
Crispin Glover is just odd. Man, what is
naturally
wrong?
He is so naturally odd, and the fact that they can totally screw that up by creating, like we were saying, a digital version of him from the waist down.
So that he's got that long, extended, thin
body.
But
the whole thing is, you never needed to do that. If you had had Crispin Glover, he is a very long, very awkwardly shaped person already. He would have seemed much more real, much more there.
Especially considering that they had digitally played with Helena Bonham Carter already. We didn't need to mess with Crispin Glover. Yeah. But they needed to, they felt that. And so what you ended up with was this very awkward, moving, strange, digital, CG, manipulated Crispin Glover that just didn't work on any level.
He looked just completely out of place.
And the other biggest problem with this film, I think, and yes, okay, if we were remaking Alice, we would say we know the story, but we're not remaking Alice. We are kind of going off on this weird tangent of a film. But the problem was that the film was completely predictable in every scene. Knew exactly, you could almost feel the words of the screenplay on screen, superimposed behind it, going, I know where the mood changes, I know what's going to happen next, I know which element is going to come into play now, we know what's going to happen. I just felt that it was so uninspired. It was so unimaginative. And it's such a strange thing to say, because it is such an imaginative design.
Exactly. You would have... you've nailed it on the head with that comment, because it's so interesting to feel that way. It's like, if there's one thing he's always done right, like, be it as it may, whether I like the film or I don't, one thing Tim Burton is very good for is style and exposure. And this film did feel incredibly unimaginative. Like, I didn't feel like I was taken to a wondrous place, whether it be dark and creepy or good and, you know, wonderful. Nothing felt inspired. I actually joked at one stage in the movie that it felt like in certain scenes that these were the rejected scenes from Lord of the Rings. Like, no. There were scenes where she runs off and she's sitting on that balcony and I'm like, oh, look. Yeah. I know that scene. No, look, it didn't feel original. It didn't feel original. We've seen these kind of worlds before. We've seen the magical thing. And visually, it's stunning, right? Mm. But not imaginative. It's not inventive. I didn't feel like they created anything different. Everything felt like they went for, let's make sure that we do the original idea of these things justice. So they basically created what we've already seen with a slight Burton twist, right? And then there was nothing new. There was nothing, you know, sort of that was that different to anything that I've seen before. I didn't feel at all captured by anything in this film. At all.
I do. I also want to give props to Matt Lucas as Tweedledee and Tweedledum. I actually thought his facial expression used for the motion capture was was funny.
Who's this?
Matt Lucas, who played Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Oh, yeah, no.
I thought he was charming. And there was beautiful moments because he's playing to himself, basically, because he's playing both characters. And I just thought some of the interplay between
absolutely, him was a lot of fun. At the same time, you know, essentially the same idea, Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Absolutely.
As the ones from the cartoon. Like, they're not that much different. It's just a visual version, like a, you know, a real-life version of Tweedledee and Tweedledum from the cartoon.
Overall, I think. Look, I've seen a lot of bad movies. We all know that, and in fact, I kind of revel in really bad movies. But the worst part, I think, the worst thing that Alice does, and this is, I've said this before, but it commits the worst crime that any film can commit. Because what I found with the film was I didn't think the film was the worst film ever made. I didn't come out as angry as Mirren did or even you did.
No, I didn't say that. I just said it's the worst film I've seen this year.
This year.
It's a very short part of the year.
Well,
so
that's
far.
True. We've only had 3 months so far. But I came out of it and I just kind of went, eh. And that's actually for me being worse than being worst film because it was just mediocre. And I hate mediocre.
Especially considering what it had in it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? With the power behind it, we had every top flight British voicing characters in there. We had Mia, who showed so much potential. We had Helena Bonham Carter doing her thing. We had the Depp. Now, I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of Johnny Depp. Well, I take that back. I was a big fan of Johnny Depp, but his last couple of films have left me cold. And now, I know there's a lot of people out there who didn't like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that much, or what he did with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I actually didn't mind Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I think Gene Wilder's version, I think, is my favorite version, but I didn't mind what Tim Burton did with it. I didn't mind what Depp was doing. I didn't mind the fact that he was playing Michael Jackson, you know, and I did, you know, I had, that was fine, and I could live with all that. The problem is that I think what's happening with Tim Burton is that Tim Burton is believing his own press and is basically slipping into predictability. And this started a while ago. I think we can trace this back and say his last really decent film, the last film where I actually came out of a Tim Burton film where, damn, that was a good film, was probably Sleepy Hollow.
I love that film.
Yeah,
absolutely, you know? To death. And I think, look, people have to understand, as much as a cynic as I may be, the one thing I will say is that I do really, I used to love Tim Burton, and this is the reason I'm so upset, because his latest films don't really feel hugely inspired, right? Like, the remake era that he's kind of in at the moment, where he's either doing a remake of a play, remake of an old book, remake or reimagining of an old book that he's been doing over his last few films. And I believe his next one, again, is going to be the same thing.
Well, he's reworking Sleeping Beauty at the moment.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, this is just him going through and redoing things that already exist. The thing that made him so awesome was that originality, that real kind of like obscureness.
When you go back and you look
Edward at Edward Scissorhands,
Beetlejuice, the first Batman film, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Ed Wood, Mars Attacks. I mean, you look at these films and they're all very unique films for their time. And you sit there and go, you know, I can see such genius in this guy. And then to see something like Alice in Wonderland, which, as you said, is a producer's wet dream, it doesn't feel like Tim Burton was in control of this.
Exactly. It has that feeling like any of those sort of films. This that felt a lot to me like Terry Gilliam's Brothers Grimm, where it just, like, he just gave up. He just went, yeah, just do what you want. Just put whatever you need in there. Just, like, you know, I've done what I need to. I've got all the costumes I needed to. I've got my actors that I wanted on screen. You know, you guys can just fill in the gap for me. Just chuck in, you know, rabid talking animals, and just chuck in dancing. That's cool. Chuck that in. Yeah, it looks stupid, but go with it.
Let's address this dancing thing. Spoilers for Alice in Wonderland. We're not going to get too much into this because we've already talked about pretty much everything we wanted to talk about. But that goddamn dance was
that destroyed. Was that
the
destroyed
most
Tim Burton
stupid thing I have seen in a long time, and we knew it was coming. They foreshadowed it all the way through the film.
No, but it didn't have to. Like, it was a plot point, right, that happened. And I can
understand.
I thought
he was going to do a jig or something. You know, I thought he was going to do, like, a little...
Or, like, it didn't need to be directly after it. It could have been them celebrating somewhere, and it's kind of in the background. It's kind of... It didn't need to be front and center camera with ridiculous kind of hip-hop-style music over the top of it.
And dumb CG work.
And wiki sounds and stuff. I was just like, this has nothing to do with the environment.
Yeah, Digital Angel says it was supposed to be stupid but weird. No, it wasn't weird. It was just stupid.
It was just stupid.
That's right.
The weird thing would have been acceptable, but it was like, you know, like a, as you said, like a jig or something like that. Time and, you know, period based. Not something that's like, all future and
it's
stuff.
It vaguely reminded me of When Horton Hears a Who, which I really enjoyed as a film.
Exactly.
And then it had that stupid musical bit at the end, that stupid song at the end that comes in. Yeah. And you sit there and go, not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, and you sit there and go, what you've done is you've just degraded what has come before it. Unfortunately, with Alice, what came before it wasn't that good to start with. But it did degrade it even further. That dance was a moment that they should hang
jump the shark.
Jump the shark. They should hang their heads in shame over even thinking that that was a good idea.
And I have been reading so many reviews, and it has all been the exact same thing. It's just people are saying that it was just... It was so out of place, and it's like you can say as much as you want. Like, I mean, we were talking as an example of movies, films that have the level where you're in an eccentric world. Like a lot of animes will do this, and Doctor Who is another great example where it's a world that has no boundaries, right? But it always stays true to itself,
yeah,
right. And this is what's really happened: is that it's out of place, but it's weird, it's silly for silly's sake. You know what I mean?
I agree.
You can very easily do something like that and make it fit in the world that it is, right? To have the weird wiki-wiki hip-hop music over the top of it breaks the tradition of the era, right? You're looking at something from Lewis Carroll. You're looking at a story based around a particular time.
The Victorian era.
Exactly.
You know?
To have something like that doesn't play out as weird. It just plays out of place.
Digital Angel says the appeal of the Mad Hatter was supposed to come across to someone that has his confidence, but to be weird and silly, that's what the other characters are loving. The other problem as well, I mean, let's also address this. Why the hell did they feel it was necessary to give the Mad Hatter a backstory? This was insane. We don't need a backstory for the Mad Hatter. The Mad Hatter is just the Mad Hatter. Period. End of story. He is the Mad Hatter, you know? Yeah. We don't need to see how he became the Mad Hatter or his backstory. That's the same thing that happened in Charlie and the Chocolate. We did not need to see Willy Wonka's backstory.
Exactly. You know? The first movie proved that.
Yeah, and Tim,
we very
and
much loved it.
Tim
for
Burton
that reason.
Has got this weird thing about going into flashbacks and backstories, and it's like, what the hell are you doing? We don't need this, you know? I think the Mad Hatter, one of the charming things about the Mad Hatter is he is just mad. Mm. And they pushed that so hard in this film by giving Johnny Depp the different accents, by giving him the different. His eyes change color, and you just sit there and go, you couldn't sell it, so you're pushing it really hard to try and make us believe that he's mad, rather than just. Be mad, you know? And look, if anybody could have pulled off the Mad Hatter, I would have said Johnny Depp in a heartbeat.
Yep, absolutely.
Post Pirates of the Caribbean in particular, when he'd done Jack Sparrow, Jack Sparrow was the Mad Hatter. That would have been perfect, you know what I mean? We didn't need to go into this weirdness that this was. And somebody addressed it, I can't remember who addressed it now, but whoever said that Johnny Depp seems to be playing musicians. Keith Richards in Pirates of the Caribbean, Michael Jackson in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and now he's Madonna.
Yeah.
With the gap.
Look,
in the
I mean, good on him for trying to take something and, you know, visualize it, and I do like the fact that he's trying that. I have no problem with that. I really don't. Like, I mean, I liked his Keith Richards. I actually have to say that as much as I'm not a huge fan of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I liked him. I thought he was...
He had some great moments.
He was very quirk.
And see, and that's the difference.
And he had it perfectly
Charlie
down.
And the Chocolate Factory, he had great moments. Mad Hatter, he did not. There was no moment in this where I just went, oh, no, actually, I take that back. There was one moment as the Mad Hatter, which I loved, but it's in the trailer. And that's where she goes, shut up, and he goes,
Well, that was in the film.
Yeah, I'm saying, but that's in the trailer. So it wasn't anything new. We'd already seen that. Yeah. But that, to me, was perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And he needed to do more of that and less of the other stuff, you know? And as Miriam pointed out, she's a dialect coach, so we go into... His Scottish is pitch perfect. It was, you know, he does a perfect accent. His British was perfect. But we didn't need it all at once. It's like, we know he's technically a brilliant actor. We know he can do this stuff. He doesn't need to do it all in every film. You know, pick and choose your moments. Anyway, not a fan. Now, I just want to address very quickly because we've got to get out of here. We'll sum this up. Would you recommend this to friends, Josh?
My friends, definitely not. Because the friends that I have that are Tim Burton fans, the ones that have seen it have walked out very depressed. They've said, look, this is the jumping the shark for Tim Burton, as I said earlier. And the ones that haven't seen it are just like, I don't want... to wreck this for myself. But those are my friends. Look, if you are a diehard, if you're one of those people that joins every Johnny Depp, you know, fan club that's on Facebook, if you are a huge fan, if you like Twilight, sure, go out and watch this because you're probably going to enjoy it. Right?
Really? The Twilight crowd?
Yeah. Okay. Well, dude, I've just been numbering up the people on my Facebook that like Twilight and then check and they like this as well. So it seems to be...
Although, as we note from before, Holly liked this, she hates Twilight. So, you know, not necessarily a correlation.
So like I'm saying, no, I wouldn't advise this to friends or anyone that asked me whether I liked it. But if you did enjoy it, there were a lot of people that seems to have enjoyed it. So, you know, go if you don't like my review of this.
Okay, and before I say what my review, what my assertion to this is, I'm going to just address the 3D very quickly, because the selling point to this film, to see it at the cinema, would be the 3D. Because, you know, I am a big fan of 3D. I'm a big fan of the new digital 3D techniques and so forth. But I have to say that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was always intended to be a 3D film. Mm. From the very, very conception, they said it was going to be a 3D film. However, Tim Burton decided, for simplicity's sake, he wasn't going to shoot it in 3D. He was going to shoot it in 2D and then upscale convert, which is what they've also done with Clash of the Titans. Now, all the stuff in Wonderland, which is the 3D environments, so the CG environments and all that sort of stuff, that's all rendered in 3D, and that stuff looks fine, and I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with the upscaling on the live-action stuff at the beginning, because, unfortunately, this is the first film I've seen in this upscale technique. All the films I've seen up until now have actually been shot in 3D, and I have to say that I actually don't like the upscaling. I actually think the upscaling technique is a bit wonky, and it actually looks a little bit like the old Viewmasters that we had as kids, where each individual layer, because if you listen to our tech show, you'll hear how they do an upscale, they break it down into layers, and then they put those layers in different levels of depth. And unfortunately, what you get in Charlie is, instead of feeling like there's depth to the screen in those early shots where everything feels like it's stretching off...
It looks like sprites in a computer game.
Yeah, it does. It looks like...
Things are layered in like flat
images. And all the images look flat on their layer. So you've got Mia and her mother standing in the foreground, they look flat, but then they've got this separation from the background behind them, and then they look flat, and then there's a crowd standing back, and you can actually see the crowd broken up into layers, and it just doesn't work, as far as I'm concerned. And unless they do a whole lot better job than that, I'm worried about all these films they want to upscale. I think if you're going to do a 3D film, shoot it in 3D. You've really got to shoot it with the 3D cameras. You've got to give it its due. I think the upscaling is kind of gimmicky. And I think this is where, if they keep upscaling films, I think that may be the death of 3D. Because people will see through that. But that's my feeling. So now, with that out of the way, I'm going to say, no, I don't recommend seeing Alice in Wonderland. Maybe if you have kids and you've got 10-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, if you've got 10-year-olds.
Yeah, look, Little Geek wants to go see it. We're probably going to have to go see it. Digital Angel has volunteered to take him to see it. So maybe we might.
Please, please do that.
I don't know if I want to see it again. You know,
I don't think I could enjoy seeing it again.
No, I don't either. I think if you are determined to see every single Tim Burton film ever made, I would actually say wait for Blu-ray. Mm. And I would say I don't think it'll lose anything in Blu-ray, quite frankly. I don't think the 3D was that staggering. I felt it was very flat 3D. I didn't feel any major moment where I went, wow, you know. So I would say that it won't lose much on Blu-ray, and I don't think it is worth the money to see it at the cinema. Quite frankly, that's my opinion. I don't think it is the worst film ever made. I just think it's really mediocre. And I sit there and go, it has good things in it, but they are far and few between, and it's not worth, it doesn't come together as a full film.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion on Alice in Wonderland. So it's a pity that Mirren isn't here, because she would give us a complete counterpoint, because Mirren was vehemently, vehemently angry at this film when she came out. She was furious, and she has declared that she will never watch a Tim Burton film again. So I'm kind of in that boat at this point. I kind of sit there and think, if, you know, unless I hear really good things about it from people I trust, I don't know if I'm going to rush out to see a Tim Burton film. I think he's kind of jumped the shark, as you would say. I think he's kind of gotten to the point where he's repeating himself. Now, we're not the only ones who think this. There is a great video online. Now, if you go to Geek Actually's fan page on Facebook, I've linked to it there. Facebook.com/GeekActually. There is a link for a video called Tim Burton's Secret Formula from collegehumor.com, which is, quite frankly, some really funny shit. And I couldn't get a copy of it for the show today, otherwise I would have played it on the show. It's also a little bit long, but it basically is College Humor guys pretending to be Tim Burton and his production crew talking about doing his next film. And my God, how true could it couldn't get any truer than this thing. So do go to the fan page and follow that link, because I think you will really enjoy that video. It is very, very funny. But I think that's all we have for today. I think bottom line is with Alice in Wonderland is, it's not hot, but, you know, see it at your own risk. Now, we've got a little bit of housekeeping we will just catch up with. First of all, let's just say that if you agree or disagree, Digital, I'm waiting for your flame. If you agree or disagree with our takes on this film or any other material that we have in the show, you can email us at feedback@geekactually.com.
Except Digital Angel.
Except Digital Angel, because we know how that's going to... You're welcome to write to us, Digital. You can also leave us a voicemail if you'd like to just speak it. Leave your voicemail at Sydney number 02-8011-3167. Just two things with the voicemail. First of all, specify which show it's for and keep it to about a minute long. Voicemail actually services three different podcasts, so just make sure you state which one it's for. We do have the fan page, which I've already mentioned. We're just going to mention a couple things. We're going to mention our friends out there in the world. And we have that that audio clip again. We're going to play that because Brad was here. He's actually left the chat room now. But
it's
Brad was here.
Late over where he is.
Yeah, it is getting a little bit late over in the East Coast. But we're going to play it because it is a good promo, and it can just sum it up so much better than I can. So here is the Movie Fan House promo.
Here at Movie Fan House, we have all sorts of movie character guests, like Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
My name is Freeze. Remember it well, for it is the chilling sound of your doom. Is that good?
And Andy Serkis as Gollum.
I like children. I like that real Adam. It looks a bit profound!
Sean Connery as Sean Connery.
That is sure Sean Connery to you, Frenchie.
And the notorious serial killer, Michael Myers.
So check out Movie Fan House.
The podcast for fans.
By fans.
Side effects of listening to this podcast include nausea, irritability, hostility, homicidal impulses, rapid loss of mental clarity, amnesia, kidney failure, diarrhea, muscle aching, tingling, inability to walk, problems sleeping, constipation, impaired muscle formation, erectile dysfunction, and temperature regulation problems. Thank you for listening.
And you can find them at moviefanhouse.com or search for them on iTunes. We also want to throw out a quick shout-out to our friends at Real Junkies at weekendronin.com. They do a movie podcast fueled by tequila, which is a lot of fun, and their feed is now fixed. So I would check them out as well. We also have to just throw out a very, very quick one. We've harped on it in every single show. We're just going to do this one very quickly today because we are running a little bit late. And we're going to say that you should shoot over to everyoneplays.org.au or pop into your closest game retail outlet. And just continue supporting the R18 Plus for Games incentive that is going on in those places. This is from PAL GN and Game have joined forces. It's not over yet, and we really do need to get that rating in place. So do check them out as well. Would you stop showing me?
No, relax. I'm just moving
funny little
the PC.
Things for 1 minute. You're distracting me. All right. So we also have our own two shows. If you aren't following them yet, we have Geek Actually Tech and we have Platforms. Geek Actually Tech is our tech component of this show, and it goes out every Wednesday at 8 p.m. live, but you can then find the podcast on iTunes. And Platforms goes out every Monday at 8 p.m. live. And once again, you can also find that on iTunes as well. We've had a few technical difficulties with getting a recording of the video stream on Platforms.
Yeah, it's been a bad few weeks.
It's been a bad couple of weeks, but we are working on that. We seem to be working okay today, so hopefully...
Everything seems to be good.
We've seemed to be flowing along quite nicely. Once again, I want to thank Holly McKay for joining us and taking some time out of her busy schedule to join us, and hopefully we will have her on the show via Skype more often throughout this year, because she is just wonderful, and I love Holly dearly. Josh, where can people find out more about you?
Well, of course, there's the Geek Actually fan page... and of course the Platforms fan page.
Absolutely.
Which are both on
Facebook.
Thank you. Sorry, Facebook. Brain fart. And you guys can check those out just by typing Platforms into the search bar, and that will pull up our site. Apart from that, of course, you'll see me on Monday, which is probably the best place to catch me next.
And
we're doing Bad Company on Monday, which is a fantastic game. It's going to be a very interesting review.
Fantastic. So a little hint, positive, negative, middle of the road?
I will actually quote somebody that is a good friend of ours that is well known for not liking games. He said that it is better than Modern Warfare 2. And
cool.
I'm very close to agreeing with him.
Cool. Also, for next week's Geek Actually, we also have a new guest. Coming in.
Yes.
Just to let you know, we have a new movie lover. His name is Brandon, and he will be joining us next week for his first run on a Geek Actually show. He would like to come in and talk to us because next week we're reviewing Green Zone.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would...
You didn't put up my awesome little note down the bottom, which was supposed to be... This is three.
Oh, no, I didn't bother with any of the lower thirds.
Lower today. Thirds today, yeah. My lower third for today was going to be I'd rather be watching Green Zone. Well, not particularly because I think it's going to be a great film.
But it's going to be better. Yeah. So next week we're going to do Green Zone. It'll be Josh, me, and Brandon. And we'll post up more details about that throughout the week. If you aren't following us on the Geek Actually fan page on Facebook, that's where we put like show updates. So when we putting out the fact that we were going out an hour later today and so forth, that's where you're going to find that information. Mm. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here. If you want to follow a little bit more of me personally, you can follow me at twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh or facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh, or my personal site is back up, which is davidmcveigh.net, or of course just geekactually.com. Everything we do is at geekactually.com. And I think that's it. I think we're done.
I think we're done.
I think we're going to get ourselves out of here. And I'm going to say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies, even the bad ones. And we'll see you all next week. We'll be right back.